Excuse me, Chris. Since you attacked CNN, can I ask you a question?
No, no. CNN is fake news. I don't take questions from CNN. Let's go to a real network.
We
Change
are
it
a real
to Fox.
Network.
Kellyanne, let's go.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we welcome back Dr. Evan Goldstein for this month's installment of Tales from the Tales, and we also have back in
Tales from the Tale.
Could you fucking let me finish the intro before you interrupt me? Thank you.
I mean, like, have
Could
we ever?
Anyway. And, of course, welcome back in studio our guest, Allison Hale. She is our guest for our Transgender Spotlight for the month of November. We're going to be sitting with you, revisiting a conversation we had with you a year ago. I believe it was a year ago this week.
Yes.
So welcome to the studio.
Thank you. I love being here.
My name is Tom, and I am your host. And as always, I'm here with my two bitchy co-hosts, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
So there's so much to cover, so many stories to talk about with Dr. Evan Goldstein. We have Allison sitting in the studio here with us. But we didn't get enough of, you know, all the craziness that happened in the election. So we're going to be covering some stuff. Nick has a lot of information that is relevant and important to the community. So we'll definitely be touching base on that. But I wanted to throw it over to Chris because we are drinking and Chris is going to tell us what our cocktail is today.
Yes, today we are having the Sparkling Cranberry Insane Germain pitcher cocktail.
Do you know why we picked this cocktail?
Because we got a room full of drinkers.
Well, there's that, but we also picked this cocktail, not that Chris didn't pick it, but we also picked this cocktail because it was a national winner.
Oh, this is true. I did see that in the group chat. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Sorry, Chris, tell me, how did we make this?
Well, it calls to make it in a pitcher, but since we are a large group of drinkers, we decided to go with like a more like a vat. Or a cauldron, if you will, like a larger, a more higher volume.
It's like the big
container.
Brita filter.
It's like something where you would put like your soccer balls and your hockey sticks.
Oh, it's
in.
Like a duffel bag.
Yeah, no, but like the big old buckets.
Okay.
You know, like jungle juice.
Oh, yeah. So it's like what you put your kegs in with the ice.
Exactly. There
got
you
it.
Go.
I
knew
it.
We'd get through to this. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and speak about this cocktail. It's super easy. It consists of one cup of vodka. 3 ounces.
1 gallon.
Yeah. 3 ounces Saint Germain elderflower liqueur. A half a cup cranberry juice and 1.5 cups club soda and a large mixing bowl or whatever you decide to put it in. fill it with ice, combine all the ingredients, stir it up, and serve in a champagne flute or other festive glasses.
That is too funny. No, but it's actually really good.
It is very good. For us, I was thinking we could have just put it in the middle and we all had big straws, like a scorpion bowl.
It's basically a vodka soda splash of cran with a little bit of love.
Exactly. Yeah.
Elderflower goes a lot. Very little, though. Don't use too much because then you're ruining it.
Now I'm really liking the idea. I want a family-style cocktail. Like, you just put it down in the center. We all just sip at it.
So like a fishbowl with big straws?
Exactly.
I love it.
So what you're saying is we're going to put a cauldron right there in the front.
Yes.
And we'll fill it up with alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then I'll loop some straws all through the table.
They'll come through the mics.
And it'll come
right through here. Genius.
We're going to have this ready for Halloween next year. You guys wait. That Gay Talk credit card just got paid off.
This is going to be like that duffel pack that you wear when you're hiking with the water.
Yeah.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
that's exactly what it's going to be like.
It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I know. We're not hiking. We're talking, but it's right there.
It's a lot of work, Phil.
It's all about hydration, too.
Bite and suck.
Indeed.
That's all you got to do.
Indeed.
So when you say hydration, is it nutritious, my dear?
And then some.
Ah, there it is. It's been said.
Chris, so why is this nutritious?
Because it comes in large quantities.
So it's American.
Exactly. Merca.
Merca.
Make your drinks in a glass big enough to swim in. That's the way we do it.
Yeah, or you can, you know, just, I don't know, drown in it. Give it to me.
That works.
I love it.
Perfect.
You guys are crazy. All right, so that is our cocktail. You can make it at home, share one with us, drink with us, do all that good stuff. But we're going to move on. Do you guys want to talk about your weekends, or shall we jump into? Did you have anything important that happened?
I went to a third birthday party. That was cute. It was in a trampoline place, and there was a lot of kids.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Lord have mercy.
I went to one of those once. It was kind of fun.
No. It was not fun for me.
Not after, like, having a huge dinner, because the whole time I thought I was going to vomit everywhere.
So yes. Uncle Paul, right, he was with his nephews, and he was jumping on the trampoline, and I'm like,
don't be nasty.
She got fuck. But anyway.
That is not nice.
So she was jumping, and I kept looking at all of the reels that she put on Snapchat, and then all of a sudden, you hear a voice out of the video. I think you got a message. You got a woof on Scruff. It was this one. And I started dying, so I sent him a message, and I said,
in the video,
by the way,
this is what has happened, is I'm videoing him with his nephew, like, jumping on the trampoline, and I'm talking to who I now know, one of their family friends, and I was like, hi, how are you? It's so good to see you, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm still recording the whole thing. I'm like, oh, you just got a woof on Scruff.
I didn't know it was Nick, so I'm going back and forth with Paul, and we're dying. I'm like, yo, dude, you didn't even know that, you know, you had a woof on Scruff. And he's like, I didn't know until you mentioned it, and I had to go back and watch my whole timeline. And then I just sat there and just laughed really hard.
Here's the thing, is like, I was having a conversation with somebody else and recording at the same time, so I was like not really paying attention, mm-hmm. didn't realize what I said, and the fact that it was recording during a 3-year-old right. birthday party.
Yeah.
And I posted it on his fucking store. I can't.
That's
cannot
amazing.
Be trusted.
No, you can't.
Nope.
No.
Do not give her your phone.
But you know, it's actually pretty funny, and I probably shouldn't say this on air, but I'm going to. So we were on our way to the party, and he was like, Nick, I'm getting fat. And I was like, me too, man. Like, we got to do something about this. And we were like, a good portion of the ride, we were just like, we got to do something about the fact that we're gaining weight. And we literally get to the party, and his mother's partner looked at him and was like, you look good. You gained some weight. And Paul just walked away. And then the guy came over to me. He's like, did I offend him? I'm like, it's a sensitive subject right now.
I'm just like, you know, hey, listen, I know the feeling, you know. Mm. I was half the person I was. Well, I am double the person I used to be 10 years ago. So, you know, it happens, and you just have to deal with it. You do one of two things. You continue to be fat and happy and eat everything that you want, or you can sit there and starve yourself and then go run on a treadmill like a fucking hamster.
That's what I'm going to
do. Those are the only two options you have. Right. So I chose food because I love food.
I love food, too.
I don't eat food because I'm depressed. I eat food because I love it, and I love anything, except shellfish. I can't eat it.
I don't eat food when I'm depressed. I eat food when I'm stressed.
Not even.
Binge eat. If I'm stressed, I like eat.
I'm pretty consistent with my meals. Like, I eat at the same time every day. Like, breakfast and lunch, it's like clockwork every day. Then during the weekends, really, I don't eat much of anything until like, I get up and I don't eat anything until like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
My only problem is when I'm bored at work. Then we're like fucking scavengers. Like, anything that falls off a plate or something, like in the window, we're all like diving and clawing at each other for it. Like, it's
especially if it's a nice piece of steak.
Well, it's a
or like a raw fish.
Yeah, exactly. More like that. More like that. We did just get the fresh salmon the other day, and I still do the same thing. It's not the chef, and he cuts me off a piece, and I just eat it raw right there. It's so good. It's so good.
And you wonder why you're always tired or sick.
I'm either going to die tomorrow or live forever. I'm going with those odds.
So Christopher, how was your weekend?
My week was a lot of homework, but I'll fit in a quick story that I find would be a little bit better. Can they see it, do you think?
Oh, yeah, of course. Just let me focus on you. Put that hand up.
Yeah, okay. For any of our Patreons who are watching, I got this nifty little thingy on my finger. I broke my fucking finger last week.
How did that happen? I'm dying to know.
Okay, it's almost unbelievable. I broke my finger writing an essay.
Can we pause this story? Every time the show starts, mm-hmm. Chris, how are you doing? I'm tired.
He's going through it.
I'm going through it. I'm stressed. Guys, it's impossible to believe I broke my finger.
No, it's not impossible to believe that I broke a bone. It's the way that I did break such a bone.
So writing.
Typing.
Typing.
Yes.
That's.
I was typing an ethics essay, And I leaned back to grab something out of my closet, and I jammed my finger in my closet door.
Okay.
And he got here, right? Because that was...
It happened Monday night.
So after the show, we recorded an episode Monday. On Tuesday, we did an election episode. Right. And he shows up, and his finger is blue.
No, it was black.
It was going through it.
And, not okay.
And
I think I broke my finger. Me and Tom.
Not only was it blue and black, it was like swollen and all bent out of shape. And I'm like, and Nick is like, that's broken.
I was straight up like,
do you think it's okay?
There's no question here. That is a broken finger. And we need to figure out how to brace it.
So what did we do, Nick?
My girl's got me.
I got out the chainsaw. And by that, I mean the knife that we used to cut limes. And I cut six skewers that you would use for like a shish kebab. And then we taped three on either side to his finger without the pointy side. We cut that off so he couldn't stab either of us.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
And
smart on your
end.
I put
tape on the ends.
Yes.
And Tom, he taped the three together, and then we put them on either side and then taped his finger up, and he had a splint until he got to the store the next day.
What did the doctor say when you got there and he seen the contraption that you had?
Oh, no. At the point, I had bought a splint. A proper splint, yes.
That would have been nice if you went to the doctor and said, well, your friends are very smart.
I did talk about you guys, but I also lied to all my friends at work and told them I went to the doctor. I'm like, I went to the doctor because I knew they were all going to say, you got to go to the doctor. But yesterday I wake up and I was like, I got to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. So I went to the hospital or the walk-in yesterday, pulled it out, and she was like, oh, and sent me down to x-rays right after they were going to take three pictures. Right after the first one comes out, the crazy x-ray technician she was on call on her Sunday, probably enjoying her day, and I was the one who called her ass in. Right when that first picture comes out, it's broken. And I was like, great.
It's just crazy. You know, it's like you think that, you know, you don't expect to break a bone, right? It's like, especially when you're writing an essay out of all places.
You know what the worst part is about this, though?
What?
I haven't gotten my grade yet, and I'm seeing that professor tomorrow, and I'm walking in saying, give me that A. Give me that A.
You need a sling. Get a sling.
Yeah, like really, really milk it.
Right up, milk
yeah,
it. Yes,
exactly.
So should I say what I said after you told me how you broke it?
Do it.
Yeah, I don't remember, but go for it.
It's about what you were reaching for in your closet.
Oh.
So he tells me this story about what he was going, you know, I turned around and I reached for something in my closet and I slammed my finger in the door. And I was like, all right, Chris, what bottle were you reaching for?
That's not really. I was reaching for school supplies. I was being good.
So you keep bottles in your closet?
No, no, I was fucking with him.
He's fucking with me.
No, you keep those in the drawer, right?
Exactly, exactly.
I wouldn't put it past you.
And I move them weekly so people don't, you know, catch on to me. It's like changing your password for protection.
That is too funny.
And I have so many things in my closet, but I'm one of them that's definitely not in the closet.
Yes. Yeah, I keep it all out. I'm like, it's there. People know.
We know.
No secret. Just grab a bottle and start chugging.
Maybe the thing bit me because I tried to walk back in it. I don't know. Like, it's like, no, you're out, girl. No, like, you are out.
Oh, honey, you are out. There's no putting you back in there.
All right, enough about my finger.
Yeah. So, my weekend was uneventful. I just worked and worked and continued to work. And other than that, it was fun. So.
Oh, wait, you know what? I just thought of something that would totally be like a Tales from the Tail kind of thing. I could just picture me going up there on someone. And then when I pull out, I'm like, oh, and the splint's gone.
So now you're talking about fisting?
That could totally be be on his blog.
Okay, I'm going to tell you boys right now, you can't do this.
What?
What he's describing, you're not going to do tonight, okay? Get it out of your minds.
What? I got homework.
You don't want to lose a butt plug up your ass. Just saying.
All right.
Because you plant the seed, and next thing you know, you're going to be wondering, maybe.
That is definitely not the size that I would want in my butt. I'm just going to put it out there.
Please.
It's nice and cold. And my nail might come off, too. Okay, this is getting gross. Let's move it on.
Can we edit that whole section out?
No. Okay, so listen. We've got some stuff we need to talk about, ladies.
Like other major milestones for the LGBTQ community on Election Day?
Yes! So why don't we talk about that? And because then we also have some good news coming out of our neighboring state that Allison is going to talk
about. It's a Commonwealth, actually.
So why don't I read off federal? Tommy, do you want to take statewide? Chris, will you do other?
Surely.
All right, great. Okay. So on the federal level, Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin was reelected to Congress. David Cicilline, Rhode Island, was reelected to Congress. Angie Craig, Minnesota, was reelected to Congress. Sheriff Davids was elected to Congress. Katie Hill was elected to Congress. Sean Maloney was reelected to Congress. Chris Pappas was elected to Congress. Mark Pocan was reelected to Congress. And Mark Tacano was reelected to Congress.
Now, these are all good on a federal level, but why?
They're all a part of the LGBT community in some aspect, either gay, trans, lesbian, so on and so forth.
Gotcha. So, statewide, we had Kate Brown. She was elected as governor of Oregon. We had Christine Hultquist, who was the first openly gay transgender gubernatorial candidate of a major party. Maura Healey was elected as attorney general of the state of Massachusetts. Dana Nessel was reelected attorney general of Michigan. Jared Polis was elected governor of Colorado. He is the first gay governor to ever be elected in the entire United States of America. There was a picture posted about him and the first family. It was beautiful and gorgeous and great to see.
And just sorry to go back, Dana Nessel shared a kiss with her wife when she was when she realized she won. Yes. So that's
right.
Really powerful.
That's right. And of course, Joshua Tenorio, he was elected as lieutenant governor of Guam.
I have a question though. Christine Hultquist, that was in Vermont, I believe. Did she win? Or is it just saying that, just reiterating that she was the first openly transgender gubernatorial?
Does not say she won. It says she was the first openly transgender gubernatorial candidate. So
it sounds like
she didn't win.
Okay. But still.
But it's still a win.
That's a milestone. That's absolutely a milestone.
The fact that she was even...
I mean, she got the nomination for during the primaries to represent her people.
Right, exactly. So yeah, definitely. Good work there. And in our neighboring Commonwealth, Massachusetts voters... upheld a law that protects transgender people from discrimination and public accommodations. I believe this was question three.
Yes, it was. It was question three in Massachusetts.
Excellent. So we're very proud of the people of Massachusetts. Also, Zach Walls was elected to the Iowa Senate. 7 years ago, Walls famously defended his lesbian mothers in testimony before the Iowa House Judiciary Committee, which was considering a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. So he stood up for his gay moms, and now he's in Senate.
Mm-hmm. And this in the state Senate. And this was well before we got marriage equality. But, you know, his video went viral. It was absolutely stunningly inspirational. You know, the young man was just so poised and so well spoken and articulate and did an awesome job in you know, defending his parents. And
absolutely.
I thought that was just great. And I'm happy to see that now he is a public figure in a state in where he fought so hard to keep his mom's opportunities of being able to be together legally afloat.
And, you know, we are proud of him for being a fighter, and the people of Iowa are proud of him for being a fighter because they pushed him into their Senate. So,
yeah. That's awesome.
Preach.
Preach.
No. So being that we have, of course, our dear friend Allison is here. Allison Hale comes from the state of Massachusetts.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about we had a conversation over the phone, right? And you told us what was going on, and obviously the call for our community to just, you know, let everyone know that was there to vote yes on question three.
Yes. Just to kind of jump on it, is the biggest thing about this was, for a lot of people outside of Massachusetts, they really didn't have an idea of what was happening. And then if you're in Massachusetts, it was literally just labeled the bathroom bill, where in actuality, it was 10% of the entire bill. It was, now you're talking about purchasing and buying and selling and everything from buying a cake to selling a dress to having a sandwich or a glass of wine or having some bartender tell you, "I don't serve your kind, get out," is really what the bill specified. But a lot of the fear stuff did relate and fall onto the bathroom. And for a lot of parents out there, I get it. I work in that realm of bad people. I work security, I'm a correctional officer in a maximum security prison. So I see these people and I can understand the parental fear. But it's been the rule, it's been the law for 2 years. And there hasn't been an issue. There hasn't been a comment or a question regarding anything. Everyone's been safe. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this, I'm just going to say religious right came in and said, oh, well, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's a perverted thing. And we can't have her. Go ahead.
In all places, Massachusetts. Like,
right, exactly.
One of the leading...
The first state.
Yeah, the leading state to like really change...
To really step in.
Yeah, yes. Change rights for the LGBTQ community. It's insane.
And with that, the entire nation trembled because if 30,000 people were able to put this on the ballot, what does that stand? I mean, we were able to put it out there. And it is kind of strange because we do take a lot of things from the West Coast, but when it actually comes to push to shove, the East Coast is what really drives the nation. And with Massachusetts actually having this on its books and having even the governor sign it right away was empowering for a lot of us. And you sit back and you have somebody, these 30,000 people turn around and be like, oh, by the way, it's a freak. We want to take it off. We want to give it, you know, take it away from you. And that was the part that was hurtful.
Well, I wonder what the language is surrounding, like, how they got people to actually put their names on.
Well, I can tell you. I actually, because of being an independent voter, I get calls from both sides. So I got a call from the GOP. And this is the one that absolutely had me floored. So I'm kind of going through with it. And I was honestly answering the questions. Like, what really means is, you know, national security important to you? Of course it is, you know. And how is the governor doing of Massachusetts? And honestly, again, phenomenal. I think he's actually doing a great job. And when it came time to the bathroom bill, there one question that they came out was, would you allow a grown man to step into an elementary locker room of the opposite sex? And I said, I'm sorry, could you say that again, please? I said, would you allow a grown man to enter a little girl's bathroom or locker room? No. And honestly said, no, no one would allow that to happen. There's not a logical person in America that would ever hear that sentence and go, well, of course I would. You know, no, flat out no. And then the next follow-up question is, well, so can we count on you to vote no on question three? And so I was like, wow, that's how you're doing it. That's how you're bridging that fear gap. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and say grown men are going to enter the small, you know, the elementary schools of America and enter into the little girls' locker room and bathrooms and, I guess, stand there. I don't know. I just...
Can I just say, like...
Please.
Here's my thing. If a pedophile wanted to step in and actually do something... to a little girl or a little boy, they would not go through the process of being trans. They would not go through the, you know... Right,
exactly.
People, like, tearing them down and pushing them down and telling them they're not worth.
Yes.
Like, they wouldn't go through that. Yeah. So you are focusing on the wrong person. You are putting a scapegoat to an entire community.
Honestly, it's been actually proven that the majority of the sexual assaults that happen with young girls typically happen at home by someone that they know.
Correct.
A family member, whether it's an uncle, an aunt, or someone they know, and not typically in a bathroom at a school or anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. But the overall point is they are just scapegoating a community because there are pedophiles out there.
Yes. And even one of the senators that was going against Warren, his biggest thing was there needs to be more research. And you're like, well, no, they researched the hell out of it. They really did. I mean, when it went through the first time, it passed all the hurdles. It went through everything. We actually looked at both sides and how do you defend the parent? How do you defend the little person? How do you, that little adult? At the same time, how do you defend that young transgender individual? Like, they need a voice as well. And all of this kind of steamed up to this little pressure cooker of an incident where finally it was like, wait a minute, we need to have this. And 2 years plus ago, it happened. And then, as odd as it sounds, like safety and security crossed the land and everything was happy and people went ahead and did things and lived their life and not a problem. And then sure enough, boom, you have this kind of take place. Now, the problem with this is if this actually took any traction, then what about Rhode Island? What about Connecticut?
Right.
What about New York?
It would have profound impact all over the nation.
Exactly.
And then that domino effect does take place.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Massachusetts is a building block. They literally were the building block for a lot of states in our nation. So if that cracks.
Now where do you go? And that would also uphold a lot of court cases as well. So now you've got legal, now you've got judicial, now you've got other fears that go in. And then you go ahead and you layer this with a nice icing of the president who turns around and says, we're going to define gender, you know, and a leak memo that kind of comes out. And what's amazing is all these things take place at like Sunday at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. Like, the country is doing other things. They're not worried about this. But yet this memo is just kind of filtered through and or it's going to get passed or for some reason Congress meets in a quiet little room in some, you know, at 7 p.m. on a Sunday or something, you know, and these things take place. And you're like, how is this happening? You know, and
yeah, you're like five mimosas in just having a nice meal.
Yeah. You know, and then
and these assholes who are probably also five mimosas in.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so you know, you kind of hear these things, and then it was just ridiculous. I mean, I was literally on the phone with you, Tom, and I was like, "Oh my God, can you believe this is happening?" And we're Facebooking, we're messaging, and I'm whipping up stories. And thank God you gave me that, you know, 10, 15 minutes that I tried to whore out to at least 20 to at least get that story out there and saying, "Hey, listen, this is what's going on."
So,
and yes.
So at the end of the day, can you tell us what was the end result? Obviously positive, but can you tell us what the voters actually said? What was the percentage of outcome?
The outcome ended up, and I'll start with that one first, was 3-1. It was close to 75-25, give or take some thousands, but it was,
which is amazing.
Yes. 3-1 of the state of Massachusetts said, yeah, no, we leave things alone. Yesonthree.org and all these other organizations that were part of Yes on Three, in my opinion, did phenomenal. There's a growing YouTube one that kind of, I'm probably gonna have to repost again and again now. And it kind of goes through, you know, you can be an asshole, but don't be an asshole.
We talked about that on the show.
That was that video. I posted it on the post last week.
And it was
at first,
I was watching it and I was like, okay, where are they going with this? Because it's sort of kind of like in the beginning, it drags a little bit, and you're trying to put your finger on what they're talking about.
They're establishing like,
you know, and then it moves into what the meat and bones and potatoes was of the story. And you're just like, oh, that makes sense.
But that's how we tell a story. Mm-hmm. That's how we do it up there. Like, you don't know where we're going to go with it. And then at the last minute, we wrap things up and we're like, don't be an asshole.
I know. You know? I lived there for 5 years. I'm still confused.
No.
Well, she lives her life confused.
No, you know, I hear you.
But we love her.
It's one of those moments where the thing that killed me, too, is the polling went till 9 o'clock and it's like 11. I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning because I have things that I have to do. So then all of a sudden, I don't know, that was me. I hit the spring. everyone stops.
I thought Tom hit a sound effect.
We may have to add that. But I get up and so finally, like, I'm literally on the TV going through channel. And of course, it's like news, weather. And all I want to do is hear, like, how did we do? And finally, I did it. I froze for a moment and you have that one moment like, thank goodness, like like logic prevailed, you know,
finally.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those moments where it's okay to be an asshole, you know, or to that masshole aspect, or to be even to be, you know, I'm gonna be this individual, but then have a state turn around and be like, yeah, you can be that individual.
Well, you know,
we've given you that. You know,
what's really powerful and crazy to me is the fact that every race that we were talking about on Tuesday was so tight. It was so close. Mm-hmm. But then you see a three to one type of decision like that. And that makes you feel hope.
Yes.
And I think that we need to revel in that a little bit.
And that needs to, that's the continuation. That's what has to now roll to New York and Pennsylvania and whatnot. Every conference I go to, every chance I get a chance to talk or do a lecture or whatever the case is, I'm always amazed because I get to this point where I'm talking about transgender and someone usually comes up to me, whether it be a classroom of 20 or 50, and there's usually that one person comes up and goes, I never thought of it like that. Thank you. And I'm like, nailed it.
Yeah.
Nailed it. I don't care if it was 100 and one person came up. I'm like, I did it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, that's the best. Like, thank goodness.
Now, and that's the important thing.
And now in Massachusetts, you have a Republican governor too, right?
Yes.
And he was quick to sign that bill
the
right
first
away?
First time around. But he's also business. Like he wants good business. He wants commerce. And he wants to know that I do make a good living. So why not spend it?
Mm-hmm. A lot of the biggest legislative achievements in Massachusetts were signed by Republican governors.
Now, what I do love about this is that you've got this Republican governor and the House is Democrat. So there has
But things still get done.
Things get done. It's like but that's how I've always viewed how the country should run.
How it should, of course.
You know, if you have a Democratic, you know, president, the House should be mostly Republican and then things get done. You know, because that's the part of the checks and balances that we forgot that this country rides on. We need to have, we can't have
was a, founded on.
You know, exactly. You know, you can't, and as much as I adore sometimes when the Democrats, you know, rile and they raise their sabers and rattle them, but I'm like, an all one party doesn't make a good country either. Mm-hmm. So you need, you know, you almost need the devil side. You need, you know, that other point of view. As wrong as it may sound, you almost need it to bring you back.
See, it's not wrong though. We talk about it all the time. The problem is, no longer do people listen and compromise.
Right.
It's their own agenda. And that's the problem, at least at the federal level.
Yeah, I agree. All right, listen, guys. Yes. So I know that we have more to talk about. Allison is not going anywhere. She's going to be here with us for the entire show. And she's also going to chime in. But we've got Dr. Evan Goldstein that we're going to get on the phone in about 10 minutes. So we're going to play some music, take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be back with Dr. Evan Goldstein. And of course, we'll return with our guest, Allison, here in studio. Here's some music. We'll be right back.
To pull you up above the earth, well, I will lift you up to show you just how much you're worth, 'cause we need to be loved. So we need to be loved. If I
we
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That was We Need to Be Loved by the incredible Anthony Starbell, a previous guest of ours. That kid has got a voice of freaking gold. He's like a little angel, that one, when he sings. But anyway, welcome back from the break. We've got still some more stuff that we want to talk about. Right now with us is the great Dr. Evan Goldstein. He's going to be chatting with us about this month's Tales from the Tail. Tales, right? Did I say that right?
Tales from the Tail.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Dr. G.
Everyone's blinking.
Nice.
Welcome back to the show. It's been a while since we last seen your gorgeous face.
Oh, thanks. Yes. I know. It's been 2 months, I think, or something like that.
It's been a bit. Oh.
You just don't love us anymore.
I mean, don't take it there, but you don't.
Silence.
No, he's a busy man. He's got a lot of butts to fix.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I can always find time for your ass. You know that.
Oh, thanks. You know how many men don't say that to me? So we're here. We're queer. We're talking about another Tales from the Tail. And this one's kind of intense.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a brief overview of it before we jump in with you?
Sure. You want to jump in with me?
I mean, honey, from day one, from the first email, I've wanted to jump in with you. So.
Delicious.
Oh, we didn't even start yet, and it gets fucking crazy.
Well,
what are you new?
This was an interesting, you know, I think there's a lot here to kind of digest. But I think, you know, a typical Southern kind of Tennessee boy who grew up with, you know, religion as his background, you know, religion. And the usual kind of, you know, you can envision the suburban life and realizing that he's really into anal play. And it wound up being so interesting to see him kind of talk about that in a way of, you know, I'm a heterosexual bro, you know, and I'm still heterosexual, though obviously I engage and like to engage anally with men. Specifically in a submissive role. And we'll get to that. But I think the key was, you know, unfortunately, he moved to L.A. For his job, and two roommates, they went out for fun at a bar, and then was slipped something into his drink, of which then he doesn't remember a thing. Got separated from his two friends, and then wound up waking up at home. No idea how he woke up at home. And felt a significant amount of anal pain. Wasn't bleeding, there wasn't blood anywhere. He checked around, finally was conscious enough, and then realized that there definitely was some injury, though he couldn't pinpoint it. And because he was kind of closeted about his kind of sexual promiscuity or sexual desires, he really held it in for a couple of weeks, before the pain really got so severe that he wound up kind of having to seek, help. And obviously he came to see me, and there was, you know, a lot of discussion of, you know, which I find a lot, which people that are searching their own sexuality, and come in with their head down, kind of, you know, really embarrassed about the situation. And we kind of work through that to really discuss what's the root of the issue from a mental perspective, and then obviously from a physical perspective. And it looks like he tore, there's three muscles in the anal area, and one of those muscles is torn. And so he's significantly loose. You know, you could definitely tell, though I do think that one of the things that I gave him was to start with some kind of physical therapy in the area to really strengthen that muscle and really see what we can do to get that back. And that's kind of where we are now. And obviously there's a lot of kind of discussions with that, that we can kind of chat about now.
So I want to talk about his specific instance, but first I want to talk about, the date rape. So in the blog, you talk a lot about the fact that you've seen this before. I want to impress upon our listeners what the likelihood of this is, and like how many times have you seen something similar to this?
it's a lot, you know. And again, I think that, you know, a lot, and I don't, if people want to use drugs and people want to kind of explore sexually with drugs, I'm a huge proponent as long as it's safe, but as long as it's kind of consensual. You know what I'm saying? I'm not obviously a proponent of this type of situation. Obviously, I'll support people that come to me with this. But I do see it. I see it quite frequently that, you know, people are going out, you're looking for certain things, you want to engage anally, and you're looking for that person, and then all of a sudden things turn wrong, you know? And it wasn't like he chose to get this, right, you know, to get drugged out like this. But we need to kind of be conscious of the fact, especially if people are buying us drinks or someone, you know, you're interested in, and then, you know, all of a sudden someone slips something in there. So, I mean, I think we just need to know that it's out there and make sure that we create kind of safe spaces with friends that are able to kind of understand that, that and see that, that if, you know, if the other two friends were a little bit more cognizant of this fact, that maybe they wouldn't have allowed him to walk out the door. Right. Obviously, it happens. But, you know, kind of understanding that this could be a potential issue. Mm-hmm.
Now, just to talk more about the drug itself, how does it actually affect the body? Because literally, this has happened to me before. I don't know if I've told the story on the show, but you literally have a couple drinks and then you wake up. You know what I mean? It's not like you drank too much and you blacked out. How does it affect the body in such a way in which that you are completely functional, but don't remember anything?
It's no different than kind of when you come into anesthesia and we give Versed, you know, you give a medication that has antegrade amnesia, which just means that moving forward while the drug is working, you don't remember. So you're able to function, you're able to answer questions, you're able to live your life, but then, you know, it just at some point you completely crash or black out. So there's a lot of that that's there. But again, that's where this component is, and it's the mix of alcohol, it's the mix of this drug, until finally, you know, you're completely just passed out.
Oh my God, it's so scary to think about. But to go back to the actual blog and the client's tale, I want to know about, so this person walked into your office, and we don't know if he's gay, bi, or whatever. He's definitely into anal play, as we know, but you could tell when he walked in that his head was low, he wasn't comfortable talking about this. How do you initiate and then maintain a conversation with somebody who doesn't feel comfortable talking about something like this, especially when you have to talk to them for over an hour to figure out what's really going on?
I was just about to say that. I mean, I can only imagine that it would be so, uncomfortable for the doctor, because initially the patient walks in and you don't know what you're walking into until they start opening up and talking.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people come in and offer up a lot of advice just because they're so attuned to their sexuality and their bodies. And then there are people that are not, right? And I think, you know, you stick to the usual kind of talking about their history, getting into kind of any medical problems, any surgical issues, and just kind of going down the checklist of what I need kind of as a checklist in and of itself. And then during it comes up a lot of different things. Like we talk about HPV and, you know, did you get the Gardasil vaccine? And then we talk about, like, you know, then I'll ask, are you gay, straight, bi, and kind of just me kind of curating those questions. I'll then kind of interject myself into that. You know, so then I usually say, you know, I'm part of the gay community, and, you know, HPV is so, rampant in our community, and kind of take it more away from the client, but more into the narrative of the community at large. And then by that time, you know, they're able to really understand that it's a safe space. And if they're not willing to give more information, I'll keep probing, no pun intended. And really get to the root of the issue. You know, after a while, you know, you can see that there's a lot more to this than, you know, than meets the eye.
Right. Now, you were saying physical therapy was your first step in the process of helping him heal. Now, can you actually heal that ripped muscle? And if so, what's the process in doing that?
I'm not sure that you're really able to heal the ripped muscle. I think you're trying to see if you can build muscle in the other muscles that are there to kind of counteract that. You know, you can understand. It's like you know, let's say we're ejaculating. When you ejaculate, most people squeeze all the muscles, right? Now you can imagine that, let's say he's with, I don't know about you, Nick, but, you know.
My face when he said that. Sorry, anyway, go on.
But most people, except for Nick, actually squeeze their entire body, right? But you can imagine, let's say he's with a girl and he's engaging and he doesn't, you know, what he, when he's ejaculating, his asshole actually opens up and it's loose and it's quite, can be quite embarrassing. And obviously there could be excrement and there could be other issues that's going on. So you become really, really self-conscious of that. And that loss of tone, that loss of pucker becomes a self-conscious issue. So I think a lot of it is trying to figure out, is there a way doing therapy on your own by using kind of small butt plugs or small toys and really like you're at the gym, you're contracting around that. So you're doing that 8 to 12 times, a couple of times a week, and really trying to see if you can kind of build muscle just to kind of create that pucker and create that, you know, control.
So it is possible to get that pucker back with those therapies.
I don't know. I mean, yes, I've seen it where people can get it back enough where they feel safe in that space. And then I find people that they can't. And I'll also work with them to send them to like a pelvic floor therapist to really see if we can kind of work that component. A lot of it is here. A lot of it is mental and is trying to figure out, can we and do we have the capacity to make that, what the client wants.
What is a pelvic floor specialist?
So no different than physical therapist that works on knees, that works on shoulders. This one works on kind of the pelvic region, so the perineum. So a lot of people have issues where their hips are too tight, right? Or their pelvic floor, that's where all the pressure is, where they're having prostate issues or erectile dysfunction. Or, you know, again, you are quite seasoned at bottoming, but many other people.
I love them.
And the muscles are just so tight in that area that they can't even think about accepting anything. So there's certain things that you can do to work on, to stretch, to contour, to strengthen, like in this guy's case, and get people to what they want.
Okay. I am seasoned. Thank you very much. That does not mean you don't need to check me out and send me to a specialist.
I didn't say that seasoned is like too loose, or I didn't say seasoned is like, no, it's like an expert, you know?
Can I phone a friend here? I need to find out, like, am I too loose? What's going on?
Oh, she's loosey-goosey this
probably
time.
So you talked about physical therapy, you talked about things that he could do going to the specialist, but like the next step would be surgery. What type of surgery could you provide for this individual, or an individual that has, and this can happen whether you had a date rape situation or just had, you know, a Trish situation where you were thrown up against a wall, am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a difference between kind of looseness and elasticity, where the muscle is functional, versus where it was kind of severed and it has no tone, has no functionality. And that's where there's a little bit of a difference. But what I try to do is actually suture that muscle or tighten that muscle in a way that gives that person that security. It's not going to bring back the neural mechanism. I hope it does, right? I hope they're able to kind of... Now, and in his case, he had a little bit of tone. It just wouldn't contract overtly so well. So the question is, can I, and do they have extra skin that's there or some hemorrhoids that are normal, but give me enough circumference that I can tighten? I don't know if you ever played the game Trivia Pursuit, but, you know, Trivia Pursuit has these like little pieces of the pie in it. So if you can think of me kind of removing one of those pieces of the pie and tightening it by stitching the rest of it closed, I'm kind of bringing the diameter, making the diameter smaller, right? Okay. And so the question is, you can't go too tight because then you can't shit or you can't engage at all, right? So you have to kind of figure out, all right, well, how am I going to get this person what they want, but also allow them to use it when they want to?
I have two questions, if I could, real quick.
Go for it.
I want to go along with that. With that kind of procedure, is that something you do on your own, or is that something you need like a plastic surgeon to help you with as well?
No, all on my own. Yeah, you know, the problem is the plastics people – they're all well and good for boobs and ass and kind of butt, but the actual hole, they usually stay away from.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
It does. Yeah. So, I mean, most of what I do, the plastic surgery, and they just don't know how it heals, the right way for you to make incisions, etc. So I think what I do is a combination of proctology, general surgery, and a lot more of kind of the plastic stuff.
All right. And my second question, when you were saying, you know, most people, when they're ejaculating, their whole body tenses up, where in this case, they kind of loosened up from this issue that they went, do they, for any chance, do they just accidentally start to like crap themselves? Like, is it loose enough?
They can. You know, they can fart, the pass wind, do whatever. And it just becomes, or just that opening, like it just doesn't feel sexy. You know, and so they just get self-conscious of that, whether it's mucus or whatnot, where it, and they're afraid that their partner, who it's, you know, a straight bro guy who's hooking up with a girl, is afraid that the partner may see it or feel it or do something along those lines and be like, what the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. And then it opens up that questions of like, you know, can you be straight and have anal and enjoy anal? And the answer is absolutely. I mean, that has no bearing from a sexuality perspective. But you can imagine a heterosexual girl seeing a loose anus and kind of questioning at that point without knowing up front that this was something that this person was interested in. It kind of opens up lines of questioning. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you. So I sometimes fear, like many people, surgery to me is just very scary. And it can be a very scary thing for many people, regardless of what surgery it is that you're going through. Is there anything that someone can do aside from subjecting themselves to surgery that could help them remedy the situation, not completely, but better the situation that they find themselves in?
Yeah, we were talking about physical therapy.
Yeah, the therapy aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing around with fillers. So, you know, we do a lot with fillers, you know, in the face. And, you know, it's not indicated, obviously. And so I'm working with some companies to try and figure out, is there a way to kind of just fill in a little bit of these areas to kind of aesthetically make that pucker, but also kind of create collagen, you know, in the face. Now they last about 18 months in the face if done correctly. And if you do them multiple times, in theory, it stimulates collagen that you may not necessarily need to inject fillers anymore. It kind of automatically does that by the body.
And even so, for that, sorry.
No, yeah, go.
And even for that, a plastic surgeon would not get involved?
A plastics would get involved on the face, not the asshole.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you're talking about the very outside of the anus. Collagen. No,
I would be doing that, and I have a couple of clients coming up that we're doing and trying to see. The problem is that it's super, super vascular, the anal area, and sometimes you could have kind of issues where the skin actually dies from fillers, so there could be some sequence, you know, some complications from it. Also, you know, does that irregularity, do you feel it sexually, where it's like a ridge? And people, and it kind of causes where people are self-conscious because of that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that I don't know the answer to, but we are using that to try and see if I can give that tightness or give that pucker on a temporary scale that then allows us to say, oh, you know what? That's really great. Maybe surgery is indicated moving forward or not, or vice versa, you know, that type of thing.
When you say filler, are you talking about strictly Botox, or are you developing something with other manufacturers that's like a buttox?
No, so Botox.
Wow. Well done.
She was,
wow.
Yeah, she was waiting to use that.
I was. I did write it down.
a new SAT word or something like that. Buttox.
Thank you. I'll take it.
So Botox just relaxes muscle. So when they're doing fillers, most of what people are doing now is what's called Juvederm, and there's many different types of Juvederm. And basically, if you think of it like cork, right, but biologically appropriate cork, right, like cork that you would do the bathtub, right, you know, it's very soft, it's pliable. And so it's a similar type of composition. You're obviously, it's safe and it's biological. A lot of it is high hyaluronic acid, which is just this polymer that is kind of thick, it's viscous. And so, like, you know, you would put it in lines like mine that you can kind of build up the chin, you could build up the cheek, that type of a thing. So there's specific different types of Juvederm and other companies, but that's what it is. And you're injecting that in kind of scars. You're injecting that hopefully in this muscle line to try and see if you can kind of build enough so that you now have that tone.
It says that you're testing these out and there's more to come, more information to come. What right now would you say is your success rate with using fillers when dealing with situations similar to this?
Again, it's like I only have a net of one. So it's not, it's very few and far between. And we're trying to figure out what's a good indication to use it and what's the safety component to it. A lot of what I try and use it for is more for scars. And kind of filling in those scars. But now we're looking at this looseness. Now, they make good polymers that you can put in for people that have a lot of incontinence. But a lot of that is permanent, and it builds a lot of scar, and I'm not sure that it would be good for our community. That's why we're going with kind of temporary, so that if it becomes too tight or if it becomes structurally not what we want, it goes away, right? That it kind of walks away. So with that said, we're looking at this. I don't have any of that information yet. I think within the next, hopefully, 6 months, I'll come back to you and say, hey, this is what I think the indication is, and this is what we've been doing and how successful it's been.
We look forward to that.
Yeah, you're kind of like an architect for the asshole. I like it.
We tried.
I didn't invent it, but I could build you a damn good one.
I got one.
Yeah, of course.
Dr. Heil, Allison Hale, nice to meet you. My question that I have is, have you had enough consultations where you go down the checklist and while they're answering, do you know kind of which direction you're going to go?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, there are definitely times where people exaggerate, where I'm like, oh my God, is this going to be the biggest thing I ever see? And then it's not. A lot of it is more the mental kind of, again, I tell people all the time, someone has the smallest skin tag on their ass. I don't even see it, but it bothers them, mm-hmm. and I remove it. Whereas someone has an asshole that has like three eyes, and I'm like, and they're like, oh, I love it. I love playing with it. Let me leave it alone. Right. So, I mean, you know, I think I know where they want to go with the discussion that we're going through.
Okay.
But again, until I see it, but yeah, basically I'll know before.
So then the next two are going with this discussion that we're doing now, and this individual who was heterosexual, but yet loved, you know, anal play. How did you know? Like, do you just start doing the medical and then the follow-up with that would just be, what has stumped you?
Yeah, nothing's really stumped me.
He talks to us.
Well said. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. No, nothing really stumps me. I mean, I just call it like it is. Like, I just ask questions in a way. I had a client come to me who's taking hormones, but they consider they're on hormones just for feminizing features, not to become a woman. And I'm just like, I'm just as intrigued as everybody else.
Right.
But I think that it's having the conversation of that everything is normal in my office. How do I figure out what your normal is? Does that make sense?
Very. It's amazing.
Yeah, and one of the important things that people can do, if you plan to visit your doctor, is be very honest and candid about what you're looking for. You know, when you think about gender nonconforming people, which is what you were describing, either they want to be they, known as they or them, the simple act of just saying, this is how I would like to be addressed, would immediately let you know how you should start that conversation. Because, I mean, I'll tell you, one of the most difficult things is to relearn how to talk to people, right? When they say, okay, I want you to address me as they or them. And you're like, oh my God, but it's like
third person.
But I also think that the issue is that you have to be okay failing. You know, you have to be okay asking questions and then realizing that, oh, you know what? That wasn't phrased correctly. I'm so sorry. Or asking them the question in a way that kind of takes it off of you, you know, in terms of how do you want to be addressed? And then, oh, okay, can I ask you a question about that in terms of where you're going? You know, I think that you have to kind of open up the discussion, but realize that it's okay to ask. It's okay to not know, but just to kind of ask it in a way that makes people feel safe.
Yeah.
Now, I have a curiosity, and we've spoken many times over the past, I would say, probably 6+ months, but you have seen many things. You have been exposed to many things, spoken to many people, and done so many different types of interviews, and of course, you know, even the segments. Has there ever been one case that completely, like, took you off guard, one, and that made you sort of kind of, like, step back and say, whoa? Was there ever like that? It was weird because I wanted to ask you this question for months, and I figured, you know what, why not now?
I think, you know, I had a client, similar situation, straight guy, loves anal play, and major CEO of some company, and comes to me with the worst asshole I have ever seen in my entire life.
You haven't seen Nick's.
Oh my God! Come on. So, really, really, really bad, and to the point where, you know, again, I'm not gonna show my cards. I'll kind of look and say, that's interesting, and then we'll kind of go over specifically the extent. I think, you know, a lot now that I do this a lot more, I'm really able to know, like, can I fix it one time? Do I need two times? What about three times? And I'm really, really honest about it, because I say, you know, we're going into kind of a gray area of science. You know, nobody taught me how to do this. This was me looking and saying, okay, how do I understand the issues in our community? And how do I try and see if someone, myself, can actually fix these issues so that people can engage the way that they want to. Right. You know, and we did 3 amazing surgeries, a lot of work, and it's fucking amazing. You know, a lot of what I do is set the stage for success where the ass actually heals really well. Regardless of what I do, the ass always heals. I remember, like, one of my professors, like, no matter what, the ass heals. It just takes time. But if you kind of place incisions in the right way, if you're honest with the discussions and you're kind of really gearing that component to the clients, you know, we can get you where you want to be. But again, I think it's understanding, just like a plastic surgeon does, what is realistic and what are kind of your end goals for why we're doing this. The end
goals. So,
sorry.
Oh my God, I can't without all of you. So I want to go back to the specific instance at hand, and mm-hmm. I want to talk to you a little bit more about the second element of this whole process, the mental element.
And number two.
And how you handled that, and how you, also this quote that you used from Lucas from Boy Erased was beautiful. And I just wanted you to talk a little bit about how you handled that and approached that with your client.
Yeah. Actually, Greg, one of my everythings, he plugged that in there. So that's for Greg. So thank you, Greg. But
proud
with
you.
That said, I think I call it like it is, you know, I said, you know, like, are you having issues kind of understanding your own sexuality in terms of, and also this component? You know, I used the date rape situation to say, hey, are you safe? That's number one. Mm-hmm. Two is, do you feel currently where you are right now? And then also, you know, do you have someone to talk to about all of these issues? I said, you know, you are, you know, from a southern location, you have issues associated with kind of the church, your family dynamic, you got a lot of stuff. And it's so great that you know, that you came to LA to see so many different types of people and accepting of many different things. I say, you know, look, you can be straight and love anal play. That's awesome. I'm all for it. You could be, you know, gay and love anal play. You could be, I don't know, and be okay with that, to say, look, I don't know where I am. But you can't hide the fact that you love anal. And, you know, and it's interesting, because I had another client very similar that wanted me to tighten his ass. I did it last week. And I said to him, I was like, he said to me, if you tighten my ass, I know I'm not going to I'm not going to engage anally again. And he's like, and I'm happy about that because I'm straight and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you're never going to walk away from those desires. Like, and it's okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But don't think, and I had him sign an affidavit saying that don't think that because I'm going to fix your asshole that you're not going to want shit up there. Literally. Right? So, you know, so again, I don't know. I don't know if that answered the question, but I think that it's providing a safe space and giving him kind of framework to kind of put together. And we left it open-ended. You know, it wasn't
You also gave him tools. You sent him to see somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, again, you see this narrative more and more and more as we all age and as we're dealing with clients.
So obviously we have to wrap this up, but I do have one more thing that I want to ask you. If somebody feels as though they were date raped, from a medical perspective, what do you do? What is the first step? If you think it happened to you, what should you do?
Yeah, I mean, clearly the best situation is to see someone right away, you know, because they can do some testing and make sure, obviously, if you need to be treated on PEP and kind of post-exposure prophylaxis and STDs and things like that, it wouldn't be wait 2 to 3 weeks. You know, it's really kind of, and then also, obviously, they could do analysis through semen, if there is that, and go down that road. Nowadays, most urgent cares and kind of centers like the gay LGBT centers in your locations are really able to kind of handle that component. And I think getting early on that is key because they can put you into mental health, and minimize post-traumatic stress. They could do a lot with obviously just the physiological component. I don't think he would have ended up any differently anally, because if he would have seen me at that time, we would have let things settle down anyway and then see the extent of the trauma. But I think it's just creating that support system early on and figuring out, was there truly a crime that's there? And is there a way to kind of connect the dots to catch that person? Because the reality is, you know, it shouldn't be happening at all.
Right. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And I do just want to say that when I do come see you, I'm going to take the 18-year-old package with the complimentary bleaching. She needs a lift. She definitely needs a lift.
She needs more than a lift. You know, Dr. Evan Goldstein, thank you again so much for taking time out of your day, your busy day, and your wonderful little, you know, white coat and all that good stuff to talk with us here on the show. It's always great to have you. It's always great to see you. We haven't seen you for a couple of months, so it was great to see your face again.
Yeah, thank you. And I think, you know, one thing is that, you know, us talking about it, I think, is the key. Because the reality is that, you know, many people come to me because of your show and others in terms of just creating the narrative that is just standard community practice and just building it so that people feel safe and they know that coming in here, they can kind of literally open up.
You know, I don't know if we told you, was he on the line when we said that we had somebody email us and they were talking about all the things we talk about and how it's for the community as a whole? And then he went on to say, except for Dr. Goldstein, that's for us.
You know,
appreciate it.
It's amazing the response that we get about, you know, various subjects that we cover here on the show. But, you know, the information that people can extrapolate from your blog and the situations that some of your patients bring forth and allow you to talk about, right, in a very loose way, not mentioning names or anything like that. But, you know, those stories are important because it lets people know that they're not alone. That the situations that happen to them could happen to countless other people, and that there's always, you know, someone that you can go to, someone that you can visit, someone that you can talk to.
And he's bi-coastal.
And he is. He's on his LA and New York, and you know, you can really find a solution for what really bothers you or what concerns you.
And then just wait until next time. We have Bruno the butt plug. Wait until you read this tale.
Oh, Lord. Oh my God, I can't wait.
Is this going to be another Jack Don't Ever Let Go?
Jack!
It's unbelievable. All right, wait. Bruno is in the making.
All right, oh, can't wait. Good.
Well, Dr. Evan Goldstein, once again, thank you so much for joining us. It is our pleasure to have you on the show. We're looking forward to the next one.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the incredible Dr. Evan Goldstein. If you guys want to visit his blog, you can do so by going to it is medium.com/@ Dr. Evan Goldstein. There you'll have a listing of all of his blog information, all the topics that he's covered, all the different articles that he has. And really, there is such a really good array of information available. So you can visit the blog. Also, you can go to Bespoke Surgical on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook and get more information on the great doctor and possibly even book an appointment like Trish.
And I'm definitely going to see him. We all know that. But yeah. But can I just say that, like, every month we get to, he sends us, like, links. These are what, you know, I've put out and talked about. And his two links that he sent us this month were so powerful. Both this one and his previous one. His previous one was about National Coming Out Day. And even if you're not concerned about your butthole, his content is just so powerful and so good, and you should definitely check it out.
So let me ask you, Allison.
Yes.
What were your thoughts on this segment and the information he was providing?
I'm glad you asked, because I got doctor and handsome and everything kind of tuned out.
I know, right? Wasn't it great?
That was us. Like, literally, that was us the first time he ever came out.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, Nick, he is hot.
What was it, like 15, 17 minutes into the show? I'm like, my question, shit. That was not my question. I have to go back to the beginning and be like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. But I have to ask, because to me it was like important. Like, do you have a set of questions that all of a sudden is going to take you down a certain track? Or is there something that shocked you or stumped you or something like that? And
you know what?
I was just 17 minutes behind schedule, though.
You know, it's interesting, because if we hadn't found a story to talk about today for this, I was hoping that we could find time to talk about his transgender clients and how that differs from his gay male clients, because it is different. Yeah. And he does see all of these, you know, facets of our community. And that experience as a whole must be very different for him, and how he approaches each one must be hugely different.
Yes, and I'm going to jump on that one, just because I had a phenomenal conversation with a coworker the other day, and working in the correctional facility that I do, I work in this health service unit, which is kind of like the hospital of corrections. So we have nursing staff, we have a doctor on scene, and being the security for them, you have everything from a Mercer infection to cancer.
Yeah.
Because inmates are people too. So they need health, they need care, and they're under the ward of the state. So we're there to take care of them. But this nursing staff that we have, as much as they're into the medical idea, they have no idea what transgender is.
Yeah.
So now I get to be Allison to them. And what's really been phenomenal is that for some of these people, they've known me prior to Allison. Before my rebirth, before I bloomed, or however you want to kind of put it. So, but they've been so wonderful as far as accepting who I am. But those questions come up, and the questions are like, so are you gay? And I'm like, well, that's actually a really good question, because you're assuming male parts with male parts and that's gay. Or are you assuming woman's part with woman's part and that's gay? Like, how are you looking at it? And going with the whole idea of, we only really feel comfortable when we know who you're sleeping with, or who you're having sex with, who you want to be with. Mm-hmm. And if you're a heterosexual, you understand where the margins are. You understand the humor, the behavior, what's out of bounds. Gay or lesbian, the same thing. But when you say you're transgender, they're like, so who do you sleep with? Like,
yeah, right.
I need to know, so I know what's out of bounds. I need to know, like, what's funny? Because I want to say something rude to you, but I don't want to be offensive.
I mean, it does happen with gay men. I mean, I get what you're saying, absolutely. But like, when you talk to a straight person, they're like, "So which one's the guy and which one's the girl?" You know, and I'm like, "Well,
we both." Nailed it.
Yeah, other than Trish, we're not a couple.
So when they ask you,
yes,
what is your response?
No, and all honesty, I just look at them and I said, "Well, two things. One, my sexual orientation is, and I'm glad you're curious about that, but we should really focus on keeping good people next to you, you know, because good people are very hard to find. So let's worry about who they sleep with. Second, let's keep good people next to us. And if you like who I am as a person so far, then hang on to me,
right.
You know, and if you don't, it's not a big deal. I've got other people that want to, you know, and that's just how it goes. Later on, I have no problem with it. Now, I had some amazing male officers And what I find fascinating is for every Academy class that comes through, this one that we just had now only knows me as Allison, where there have been Academy classes prior that have kind of seen my transition. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing you have to bring up too. Like, I don't transition alone. I transition with everyone. You right. have transitioned with me. People I work with transition with me. Mm-hmm. I have to take everybody with me, and you have to move in such a fashion where you're moving for everyone. You're making sure you're available without waving the flag, without sticking your stuff in their face. But you're moving at a point where you come around the corner one day and they're just like, hey, Allison. And it's that morning blah, you know, every day it's just Allison. It's no longer that other individual. Mm-hmm. And you move at such a pace where there's no other question to it. But as I digress, so my male partner looks at me and we're sitting there and we're at work and he kind of looks over and he goes, hey, if you ever get married, would there be a man and wife on top of the cake? And so I'm like, you're trying to ask if there'd be two women? Or is that what you're going with? And he's like, kinda.
I was like, that's okay. One way to ask.
Right.
It.
I says, now you have to understand what I find is I've taken so much pride in becoming the woman that I am that for anyone to feel, and this kind of goes with where he was kind of going next, and I'll jump ahead, is that sometimes I'll go on a date with a wonderful man. And the first comment is, well, he's gay. I'm like, well, no, because I'm not going to lie to you. I work really hard to be the woman.
Yeah.
My job when I get dressed is to literally be the arm candy that stops fucking traffic.
Yeah, but there's also, you are a woman that identifies the way you identify. So you're a trans woman identifying as whatever you identify yes. as. Whereas people don't see that. They see a trans woman that was a man. So does that mean they're gay or straight?
Right.
What it means right. is you're a trans woman who is either gay or straight as a trans woman.
Right. So that's where you kind of have to get them to going like, if I was ever dating a man, I'd be a heterosexual. And if I start dating women, I'm a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some people of a, it's bizarre too. It's like anything under 30, they go, oh, okay. Like not even a question, you know? Right, and then it's exactly. like, as soon as you hit like 42 and above, they're like, what?
Well, those are the people that have most been impacted by the constraints yes. of society.
No, without a doubt.
So you mentioned yes. earlier about your rebirth and well, you came on the show last year. And yes. At that point, how far into your rebirth were you last year when you came onto the show?
I was 1 year. This whole thing has been so amazing because I've moved at such a snail pace, even with my own coworkers. And then yet on the other side of the coin, I've got other friends that are in the community that look at me like I've been racing forward. So October 28, 2016, I was ripped open. I had my ex-wife outed me. Put out pictures on her Facebook page of me, both male and as dressed as Allison.
We talked about this.
Yes. And then 2017 came and I tried to tell everyone, this is who I'm going to be. I'm going to be Allison, hopefully better than those photos that I first had, but I'm going to be me. And if you have any questions, I'm still learning, come to me. And all of 2017 came through. And I had some people that came up, some really good questions. And as 2018 came, I said, listen, now I'm going to be Allison. I'm going to do the paperwork. I'm going to set myself straight. I'm going to do everything I can to be the woman that I was always supposed to be, but never really given the chance to. And then it took on a new kind of vision because now I became Allison who was saying she was Allison, but was actually becoming Allison. So Allison came out of the woman's locker room and everyone's like, whoa, you're using that room? I'm like, I have to. I have boobs. Because you guys are freaks in the other room. You guys were looking at me before I had boobs. You know, like, stop it. And then when you call them out too, it almost kind of puts things at ease, you know, and it's that big brother, little brother thing where you almost have to like give them a punch in the arm just to realize, hey, stop it. You know, it's that bully that you kick in the shin that you tell them, cut it out. And they're like, oh, all right. you know? And it's those kind of things that take place. That so all of this time, like, again, I started laughing because in 2018, I started in March. By June, I had all the paperwork done, and I went to my superintendent that owns the facility that kind of runs it, and I said, here you go. Here's all my paperwork. I'm using the woman's locker room. I've had enough. And without even question or a flinch in his face, he goes, you deserve it. You've done it. You've been the more patient to us. Thank you. And it's yours. And again, it's because I've never tried to look at it as I'm transitioning alone. I've always tried to make sure even the three of you that you've come with me from last year, you know, hopefully I'm more of a pronounced Allison than I was then. Maybe I was questioning that or whatever it is. Now I'm more driven and it's my coworkers that help me as well. It's the people that are around me, my family, my neighbors. It's those people that have transitioned with me as well. And as a side note, I just wish I could get the Army to transition just as easily.
Well, and speaking of that, I wanted to mention too, it was Veterans Day yesterday. Today yes. is Veterans Day observed. I wanted to say thank you. Thank you for your service because you served in the armed forces.
Yes.
And also to all the people that have served, if you're in our community or even if you're not, you know, it is important to recognize that, you know, that the freedoms that we have, the ability to actually be able to sit at this table.
Right.
And have this conversation.
And talk so much shit about our president.
And all and everyone else, right. You know, comes at the expense of having people go out there and fight for our freedoms. So yes. Thank you. And oh, thank you, everyone, for seriously.
And yesterday was the 100th year anniversary of the armistice signed that ended yes. World War I. 100 years ago yesterday.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's one of those things, too, that one of the things that I kind of look at it as well, especially of all of this, as I go even further than that, and even the voting is very personal to me. And I was brought up that way. And as odd as my parental units were, one of the things that they kind of imposed on me is when I asked them, I remember saying, like, Mom, you know, what did you vote? And Dad, what did you vote? And they wouldn't tell me. And one of the things they said is, no, men and women have died in order to make sure that my voting is private. I don't have to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my right not to tell you because we do have a secret ballot because I'm not held. I'm not persecuted. I don't have to say anything.
There's a reason we don't just stand there and have a candidate stand up and we raise hands.
Right. Yeah,
The only thing that's actually recorded is if you did or did not vote.
Right. And to that, I like to at least my thing, especially one of these times, like these November 6th voting times, I do. I make sure that people look at me like, so did you vote for Baker? I'm like, he was a candidate. He's a possibility.
Well, you know what? Mm-hmm. No, it's funny because I've said this on the show before, but one of my most favorite and powerful moments that I had with my mother, I fought with my parents a lot about Trump versus Hillary. They're from Florida. They're mm-hmm. Republicans. They're independent Republicans. Yes,
like moderate Republicans.
Yeah. And they 100% they were voting for Trump. They were voting for Trump and it was a constant battle.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out my father did. We do have open conversations about it because politics now are so prevalent. And if we don't have educated open conversation, then it becomes an unhealthy fight. And anyway, my mother, the day of the election, sent me a photo of her ballot and she voted for Hillary.
Yeah.
And she was, I think, the only one out of my family that actually went ahead and did something that she literally said, don't tell anybody in our family,
right.
But I voted for Hillary.
Yeah. So that very powerful moment. And those are the things that I try to, those actually mean something to me, even being a veteran, because men and women died in order to make sure in our Constitution that happens. And then, of course, you go with that Constitution and the right of love, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness kind of kicks in. And I'm like, question three, what? anyway, but yes, so yeah, thank you very much. Bosnia, Iraq, extended tour.
You were in Bosnia?
Yes, I was. Oh, yeah, it was that, not gonna, nowhere to lie, that one messed me up. That was when you get to see what Milosevic was capable of then.
Monster, a monster.
Yeah, It was that's when I first came back, and even then I really attached myself to the military because I almost needed it to almost kind of like rule some things out. So I kept trying to be like the fastest and the strongest and the most determined. And at this moment in Bosnia, I was this protective service detail with this general in Bosnia and MND North. And one of the things with the general, unfortunately, is you have senators that want to come on over. And one of the things that all the senators need to see is the mass grave sites or these sets of destruction so that it doesn't happen, or they get to go back and kind of talk about things that should never take place again. But when you're on the protection detail, you're constantly going to this mass gravesite, and it's a scene that you only need to see once, right? You know, and then
at most,
and then you just close it, you know, like, okay, thank goodness some British forces were there. Scotland Yard was doing a lot of the DNA testing. So you could kind of, you know, it was a secure site. So you just tell the guys, hey, I'm your sergeant. Feel free to go ahead and view the site, rub elbows with the senator. I'll do guard duty on the vehicles. You know, I got to see it once. That's enough. But unfortunately, like a lot of things, especially during this time, you bring that home with you. And then what do you do with it? And it festers when you're in moments of nothing more than in line at Dunkin' Donuts and you're three people deep and all you want is a coffee and you get somebody like doesn't know how to order a dozen donuts and you're losing your mind, you know, and just short of completely losing it, army style, you do a self check because you shouldn't be angry at a Dunkin' Donuts. You shouldn't like fly off the handle. And a huge shout out to everyone that has that post-traumatic issue. And again, one of the things that I like to hear that they're working on is to get rid of that D. So it's post-traumatic stress. The disorder is not a disorder because it's a natural response to an abnormal action.
Right. I agree totally with
you
that.
You know, so that PTS that takes place happens to a rape victim, like we were talking about earlier, happens to a nurse who sees a lot of trauma in the ER, happens to the soldier who was overseas. And when that happened, I knew something wasn't right. And for whatever the reasons are, whatever powers above, got me to go see some help.
See, that's the problem. A lot of people don't do that.
Yeah. And that was something wasn't right. And whether or not it's in our culture to not talk about it, I'd like to hopefully we're turning that tone, you know, we're turning that corner on it and we're now getting there. But unfortunately we have that 40-year-old and above that just repress, that hold that stuff in. And, it manifests in such sad ways. That when I came back from Iraq, the first thing I really did was just check myself into the VA and 6 months of amazing PTS study. I was able to lower everything, kind of give a handle on things and, put things in perspective. And it was one of these moments, it was in 2015, where I got really sick. I had to do a spinal tap and something was matter and ended up being just like two different viruses within my body. And it was like this guy at Worcester Medical Center that was like their version of House, you know, that old TV show. And he was like, yeah, he's got two viruses. Give him this, you know, and throws a file down. And sure enough, two antibiotics later, I'm 24 hours, I'm making cookies in the kitchen. It was weird. But it was... It was that moment that I was like, wait a minute, if I live through all of that tragedy and not to become who I'm supposed to be, that's ridiculous. That's a waste of life. Mm-hmm. And so that's what really kind of set me in motion, not being shot at, not being blown up, not seeing mass grave sites, not seeing any of that, but actually having two viruses float through my body, being sick in my own bed during Christmas in 2015 made me go, what am I doing? You know? 14, because February 15 is when I actually had my first conversation. But yeah, so here you are, you know, and it was being in bed and I came home 2004. Yeah. So 10 years later, I'm in bed during Christmas completely, you know, maybe it was my own body telling me, hey, asshole, be yourself.
Yeah, you
know?
Right. Exactly.
You know, makes you wonder the way karma runs. But yes, thank you. That was a very, very long-winded version of thank you. I enjoy being a veteran. I have 3 years and then some. I'd like to, at least for my 20 years, I've been a military police officer for every one of those years, except for the transition time, where the last administration had it. And without naming names or whatever the case is, there was a manual. The manual was thought out. The manual was well written. The manual, many military makes a manual, and it thinks of every what if you could imagine, from cadet to astronaut. It names it. It figures it all out and how to do it. And it was a great manual. And we're following the manual. And then this administration kind of like shit canned the manual.
That's because they're just not smart.
And that was the frustrating part, is being halfway through it, you know, and doing everything on my own and being able to. And part of it, too, is I can understand is like there's a physical fitness aspect to it. So, yes, if you're going to be physically fit, great. And I even looked at them and I said, listen, you know, then let me inspire the women of the Army. Let me inspire those that are unfit. Let me give me the chance to kind of step up and do something. The trans men, the trans women, let me be part of that, you know. And even on that aspect, then there's no reason why I can't influence the men to be more physically fit. And they just kind of patted Allison on the head. They said, thank you very much. That's amazing. Yes, we'll take that into account.
You have beautiful hair.
Yes. I just sat there and I was like, okay. And they just said, listen, why don't you just focus? This is what do I want you to do? I want you right now, I want you to take that energy, which is very positive, and we're very proud of you, Sergeant Hale. I want you to go ahead and take that energy, and I want you to just focus on officially becoming who you want to be. And then when you're done, give us the documents. We're going to forward this, and we're going to make the Pentagon hear you, and we're going to be behind you. I said, okay. So I did. Like, literally in 3-4 months, I have this paperwork, and I said, okay, I've got the paperwork. You know, majors and colonels and captains, like, where do I send it? And they're like, yeah, just hold on. I'll get right back to you. I said, well, okay.
So, crickets.
Like, what? And then so you kind of like keep calling them in, be like, what's going on? What do I do? And so now it's kind of getting so close where it's getting really close. So now I'm kind of happy that the first signed memo that allowed me to become a transgender soldier, which I thought was nice that I got a permission, was February of 2018. And I'm kind of like, guys, I don't know if you know this, but there's a calendar on the wall, and it's pretty close to a year. So can we get this moving? I mean, there's things I need to... I mean, on Army-wise, I don't mind saying, like, you join the Army because I like... I'm not going to lie to you. I like shooting things. I'm really good at it, like targets and stuff like that. I love... I mean, there's a whole idea of breath control and sight alignment and the fundamentals that you can really apply to anything, stressors of life. If you're stressed in life, then you're not going to be able to see your target. Same thing even on as an Army. You know, if you're stressed, you're not going to be able to shoot and see the things correctly. So how to deal with stress, how to deal with all those little stressors come right down to it, and how to apply that science or that physical science to them. And all these little things kind of play out, and they just... So right now, Allison's bubble wrapped on a shelf. Every once in a while, I get somebody come by and pat it and be like, you're adorable.
Well, you are adorable. You know, like, you are adorable.
Absolutely.
I don't want to snap your neck.
I do have to say that, you know, ever since I've met you, we've had a connection that's been very, very special. I think the world of you. I think that you're doing amazing work. I think that you are doing what you need to be doing to ensure that you're living your best life and your most true life every day. And you work at it every day. And not only do you do that in person and with the people that you surround yourself with, but you also do that on social media and at your speaking engagements and at work. And all in all, you really are taking it upon yourself to really not only involve yourself, right? Because you're not going on this journey by yourself. You know, everyone's coming out with you at the same time.
Yes.
And you mentioned that before.
No, I'm not in the conversation, actually. I just got an email.
You're throwing up hand signals.
No, I'm sorry. That was my own thing. I just got an email about a Cole Haan's new line, and oh my God, she gonna go shopping.
All right. But she's a mess.
But we do have an update. Democrats will pick up a Senate seat in Arizona with Republican Martha McSally conceding the race to Kristen Sinema.
Cinema.
Yeah. Cinema.
Wow. Awesome. Another seat for the Demis. And there's a recount in Florida. Big surprise.
Yeah, right? They always find a way to fuck it up. Oh, all right, boys. On that note, I'm sure.
Boys and gals, I think we should wrap up the show because it is getting to that time, but I want to take an opportunity to just say thank you. Thank you for sitting with us.
I try to do lectures. History, biology, and resiliency is what I try to push forward. The history of the transgender people, how the biology, the simple biology of it really comes to it, and it's really nothing more than we're just the mere fact that a child is born to have five fingers and five toes is a miracle. So even if they come out transgender, that just means that they're a bridge between two genders, and it's an ingenious and beautiful thing. And the resiliency really kind of resonates with all of us. Every time we get knocked down, we get back up, and whether we go to work or school or whatever the case is, we're showing our true nature, and that can't be ignored. And even with the transgender, that just needs to be rung twice as hard, just to give them that backbone that yes, you are who you think you are, who you feel you are,
especially right now.
Mm-hmm. Definitely now.
Definitely right now. All right, well, Allison, again, thank you so much. Right behind you is a wonderful little book. By the way, we do have our
resident
guest that she comes in and helps us out every so often. Lady Heather is here in studio with us. She's been silently sitting there in the corner. Hold on 1 second.
Heather, steal Chris's mic.
Hello. Nice. And can you hear me?
Yeah.
I don't have earphones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we can hear you.
You're good girl.
Mm-hmm. So we have two things that we're gonna cover before we wrap it up. One of the first ones is our gay talk term. So, ladies and gentlemen,
brought to you by unicornbooty.com.
Not really.
Take it away, girl.
I love that. So today's term is cue cards. They're calling cards left and exchanged by gay men. Such cards have the appearance of professional business cards, contain one's name and address along with a risque saying or picture beneath the name. For example, a gay pilot's cue cards might contain his name and a picture of two bees blissfully locked together over the caption, "Fly United."
So this week's gay talk term is cue cards, brought to you, of course, by unicornbooty.com.
All right, Christopher?
Yes, on this day in gay history, this is a really fun fact. This is a really cool one. On this day in gay history, November 12th, 1964, in Egypt, it's the first depiction of a same-sex relationship found in an Egyptian tomb. We're going to try my best here. Nyang Knum and Knum Hotep,
that's not a word,
are discovered buried together in the same tomb, side by side. Wall art shows the two men kissing and embracing each other. Egyptologists believe this may be the oldest depiction of a same-sex relationship ever found.
Yay! And now Egypt's really fucked up.
Yeah, that's true, Joe. They always find a way to fuck it up.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
But I thought that was fascinating.
That is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, to back that up, 1503 was the first transgender. And it was an Egyptian princess who realized that needed to rule as a pharaoh.
We've talked about this on the show.
Yes, indeed.
So they nailed it twice, even. Egypt's got it done.
They had except for the whole like enslaving the Jews thing.
Well, yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, listen. Well, if you love the show, make sure to rate and review your show on your favorite podcasting service. Doing so allows us to become more visible within our podcasting community. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device as soon as the episode is published. You can also support us on Patreon, which is a service that allows you, our listeners, to actually support us here on the show. Not only do you get to do that, but you also get access to the live stream video that we do every week that we put out for our Patreon subscribers. And so, again, thank you. Chris?
Yeah, and next week...
Good morning.
Next week, once again, it's all about the dish. It's just going to be us boys in the studio, though Trish will probably pick up someone... Yeah. Pick up someone to bring in.
She'll pick up a random person.
Yeah, she'll find someone.
Yeah, I'm just going to overall apologize for my lack of work lately. I've been like slammed at work, but now things are starting to level out and I think I'm going to dive back in. And so sorry in advance. Thank you to our guest, Dr. Evan Goldstein, for this month's Tales from the Tale.
Yes. Ow, it hurts.
Also, a big thank you to Allison Hale for joining us once again for today's episode. You're such an inspiration and such an amazing human being. We love having you with us.
Thank you.
And thank you, Heather, for bringing us our gay talk term, brought to you, of course, by
unicornbooty.com and bringing us our in-house guest.
Exactly.
Brought to you by Heather Lee.
So many thank yous. So many thank yous.
Christopher,
so, can we put a rubber on it?
A blue one?
A big blue one, please, because it's been a long week.
Yes.
All righty. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can do so by heading over to our website, clicking on the Contact Us tab right at the top of your web browser. There you can leave messages, comments, suggest a topic, submit a question for the cast or for a guest host or a host in general. Or you can also call us and leave us a voicemail with your question. We can answer it for you on the show. That phone number is 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need all those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. With that, I'd say that is our show. Thank you guys and have a good night.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.